Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. How did Mumford and Sons get as popular as Madonna, Justin Bieber, and even the Beatles? Find out now on Advanced. Welcome back, friends. Today, two of our music article for this month of May. Today is the 28th, and you're back in the studio with Naomi, Nathaniel, and Catherine. So welcome as we continue on page 40 of A New Spin on an Old Sound. Now, joining me are a couple of Mumford & Sons experts, I'm very glad to report. Personally, I'm a fan as well, but these two know much more about the band than I do. So, once again, Catherine, welcome back.
Well, thank you, Naomi. It is good to be back, and I hope you all are excited to talk about day two with Mumford & Sons. I think it will be good.
Now, you are a fan of the band.
Yes, definitely.
And when I asked you if you had a favorite member, you said, well, maybe Winston. Why?
Well, I said earlier, it's because of the way he plays his banjo. Winston Marshall tends to play very enthusiastically. he likes to dance while he plays, and it's just entertaining to watch. You have to admire his passion for the instrument.
Well, it sounds like all of them are quite passionate when they play, that they're quite fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I love watching their concerts and videos online. All the members of the band they're into it. They're headbanging, they're jumping around, they're just making noise, and the crowd loves it, and I think everyone really enjoys it.
Mm-hmm. Nathaniel, do you have a favorite member?
I don't have a favorite member. I could not choose a favorite member. I think for me, definitely Marcus Mumford has the most exposure because he's the lead singer and I've probably seen him do the most interviews.
Exposure, that's one of our words for today. Can you explain it now?
Yes, exposure would just be being out there available maybe to the public, in the public eye, as we sometimes say in English as well. I said that has the most exposure, but we're going to talk about later how the band actually tries to limit their exposure in general.
Okay, so mostly what you find out when you learn about Mumford & Sons is really just related to their music, not so much about their personal lives. One of the things that you had mentioned, Nathaniel, we were talking about how it said in our little sidebar here that all of them play the drums, but that's not exactly true.
Yeah, well, they usually don't use a full drum set, but one of them usually just uses their foot, which hits a bass drum, as you often do see in a regular drum set. But just that one piece is what they often use. One of them will do that.
So they don't have a dedicated drummer, which is something that really sets them apart from most bands, which I think is so interesting, too. They're all focused on these other instruments, and they do have so many different instruments that they use. In fact, they don't always do all of their own playing either, right? They sometimes have guests?
That's true. A lot of times they'll bring in people to play the horns or the trumpets for their songs. Or I've seen them bring in a fiddle player who's actually from Texas, and he plays with them. He sometimes tours with them. So a lot of times they'll have 10 or 12 or even more people playing on the stage.
Which I think also shows a kind of humility, maybe. Some artists are really about being the stars, you know, like all the focus is on me, me, me. I think of Beyonce at the Super Bowl, you know, a few months ago where the other microphones were turned down. Like she's hogging all the attention. And you often see that with pop stars where a lot of it is about their image, their ego. And that just doesn't seem the case here at all.
You know, I think that they really try to bring everyone on stage, which is often, it seems like, a lot of people for their concerts and everyone off of the stage. They try to bring everyone together and give it a really kind of family home-like feel.
Yeah. So their sound is different from most people, and their way of doing things is different from most pop stars as well. And so we left off yesterday with a question, right?
That's right. The question was, how did these London lads carve out a space singing about struggle and redemption? How did they make it in this you know, hard-bent musical world.
Okay, let's find out about their plan as we jump into our first reading for today.
A band with a plan. Their strategy, not that they'd ever call it that, begins with touring, and lots of it. As Lovett suggests, he and his bandmates more or less live on the road, performing crowd favorites and honing new material in a variety of settings across the globe. From tiny gigs to roomy amphitheater concerts to the day-long mini-festivals it put on this summer in out-of-the-way American cities such as Dixon, Illinois, and Bristol, Virginia. The band has been careful, too, with exposure, limiting interviews and television performances, but encouraging easy access to its music. During the first week of Babel's release, Mumford & Sons allowed listeners to stream the album for free on Spotify, something the online service said happened more than 8 million times.
So, does this band have a plan, Nathaniel?
Well, like this article says, they would never call it a plan. They probably wouldn't say that they do. And we actually talked a little bit about that yesterday when they, you know, the second album really didn't come from a plan so much as the fact that they needed more songs. But here we also see that it says their strategy begins with touring and lots of it. So maybe that is part of a plan.
Okay, maybe not a real premeditated, thought of ahead of time, sort of worked out with a producer type of strategy, but just the way they do things. And so what do we mean by touring?
Well, they're traveling in either North America or Europe mostly, and they're playing concerts for people. They're playing different shows, and they're going from city to city to play different venues for different people.
Right. And in fact, they do so much of this that Lovett describes it in a way that doesn't sound all that appealing to me.
That's right. He calls it living on the road, which that sounds hard, never getting to be home. They're basically in a bus most nights, traveling after they perform, and they never really get any downtime, I don't think.
Right. And I think, I mean, we all enjoy traveling, but most of us after, you know, a week, we're done. We're ready to sleep in our own beds and eat in our own kitchens and so on. And so to have this kind of lifestyle, I'm sure can be quite draining. But while they're on the road, what are they doing?
Well, they're performing crowd favorites, all those songs of theirs that people really enjoy. And they're also honing new material. So they're kind of practicing this new stuff that they're working on. Sometimes they might throw in a song that's in development or maybe that they have just recently released as well.
Okay. So that idea of honing something, often it's like sharpening something. It's making it more perfect, making it better and better. So this is a great way to do that. If they're coming up with new music, they can test it out on audiences right away and see what the reaction is. I think that could be very useful. But the settings are so interesting.
Yeah, our article says that they play tiny gigs or they play in roomy amphitheaters. I think those tiny gigs would be interesting because it makes it makes them feel a little bit more approachable. But the amphitheater shows are very, very interesting, I think. There's one in particular that I like.
Okay. First, can you tell us what an amphitheater is?
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. okay. An amphitheater, it's a huge room with a stage in the middle, and the seats are set up sloped so that everyone can see. But
and this is a very traditional kind of theater, and it's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. And so you'll often even find outdoor amphitheaters that can seat a lot of people and have very, very good acoustics. The sound carries surprisingly well. But you mentioned that they actually feature an amphitheater in one of their videos.
That's right. We listened earlier to I Will Wait, and they have a video online of the band performing this song, which I think is one of their best performances I've seen, because the band is so lively and entertaining, and the crowd is just they're eating it up. They're dancing and screaming, and the band, they just feed off of each other, the energy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. But that's not their only setting for playing in.
Right. We mentioned Coachella yesterday, and they do place day-long mini festivals. Now, Coachella is a huge festival. These mini festivals sometimes happen in smaller towns that they just happen to kind of be passing through, out-of-the-way American cities like Dixon, Illinois, and Bristol, Virginia.
Okay. And so another factor here when it comes to their so-called strategy, maybe not a real strategy, has to do with what we started off with today, that idea about exposure.
That's right. In our vocabulary, we see that exposure is things that are written or said about someone that makes them well known. Mumford & Sons is sometimes notoriously they don't give very many interviews. It's hard to find information about them on your own if you're looking online. I don't think they like to give a lot of personal information.
Which is different from a lot of celebrities. Many celebrities will practically pay people to put their picture in the magazines and in the newspaper, and they're tweeting every other minute. And, you know, which of course makes sense because the more exposure you have, I mean, the theory goes, the more popular you are, but that hasn't been the case here.
No, and, you know, this makes me think about Marcus Mumford is married to actually a famous actress, somewhat famous actress called Carrie Mulligan. She's quite young, but he does not like to speak about his marriage much at all. So they'll talk about their band and their music almost as much as an interviewer might desire, but they don't want to go to those more personal areas. That's their own business.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think that when actors or music stars give away too much information, they become less about the music and it's all about what they're doing every day, what they're eating, not about what they're giving to people, not about the music anymore.
Good. I think there's also just the side of kind of wanting to protect the other people in their lives. I know we were looking into where exactly each of them had grown up and been born, and we actually couldn't confirm some of those details because they're just not available online. And I have some admiration for that. I think it's kind of smart of people to leave a few details out of the public eye. You know, maybe some of them just don't want their families to get, you know, visits from crazy fans or something like that. So I think there's a lot of wisdom to it. But again, it seems to them the more important point is that they really do want to bring people not to themselves but to their art.
Right. And the article says they encourage easy access to their music, which they do in some different ways. And I think there's one that it mentions here right after that sentence.
That's right. It says that after the first week of Babel's release, Mumford & Sons allowed listeners to stream the album on a website called Spotify, which allows people to basically listen to music for free. Some albums, not everything, but some.
Okay. Now, we don't offer Spotify in Asia, but we can give you a little sample of the title track from this album.
That's right. The title track is Babel. This is a beautiful song, I think. I feel like it's all about self-identity because some of the words are saying, I know my weakness, I know my voice. It's a really gorgeous song, so why don't we take a listen?
Time has numbered my days, and I'll go along with everything you say. But I ride home laughing, look at me now, for the walls of my town, they come crumbling down. And my ears hear the call of my unborn sons, and I know that choice is color. It all to the watchman's son. I never lived a year better spent in love.
Now, the idea of offering your music for free on a site like Spotify, what do you think about that?
Hey, I think it's great. You know, I mean, if you're trying to let people continue to be legal and giving them a chance, even if it's just a window of time, like a week, for them to listen to your album for free, I think that's great.
Okay. Catherine?
Well, I'm a little bit ambivalent on this topic. I think it'd be great to be able to listen, but I feel like just for the artist's sake, so that they can have some compensation for it, there should be a limit on how many times maybe people should be able to listen to the songs or the albums.
Okay, that's a good point, too. I think it's interesting that, according to Spotify, more than 8 million streams took place, you know, like more than 8 million times did people log on to listen to this album. So I do think there's a lot of potential for exposure to the music in a case like that. And I think it would be a great idea. For me, the more I love an album, the more likely I am to buy it at some point, even if I haven't bought it yet. So even if a friend kind of loans me a CD or something, you know, at some point I think, oh, I want to buy that. That was great, you know. All right. So at any rate, it worked for them because they're continuing to find a lot of success. But let's find out more about their story and how it's continuing as we turn over to page 41.
A sense of belonging. Love It singles out the group's performance with Bob Dylan at the 2011 Grammy Awards as a pivotal moment. And he's certainly not wrong. Say No More enjoyed its biggest ever sales week in the days following the telecast. I think it introduced us to people who watch awards shows the way we grew up watching music on TV, he said. It makes sense that it would widen our audience, but we weren't thinking about that at the time. Indeed, all of this maneuvering seems secondary to the powerful sense of belonging the band's songs engender among its fans. Mumford & Sons offers a chance to stand up for hand-played music in an age of machine-made pop. It embodies the feel-good realism of people singing and playing instruments on stage. And yet, the group isn't didactic about its position. In a recent interview with National Public Radio, Marcus Mumford declined to describe the band's music as bluegrass or any other traditional form, saying, "We just call ourselves a rock band, really."
So the band has a sense of belonging, or does it really? That's sort of the question that's running through my mind as we read this article. It seems like in some ways they fit very nicely into their newfound success and fame, and in other ways they're breaking the mold. They're just a different kind of group from most of the ones out there. Now, throughout this article, we've been focusing a little bit on Ben Lovett. He's the one being interviewed for this article. And so in the beginning of this reading, Lovett singles out a certain performance. And if you single something out, you're drawing attention to it. You're focusing on it. And what moment is that?
They performed with Bob Dylan at the 2011 Grammy Awards. And Bob Dylan is probably the biggest name when it comes to folk music. So it makes sense that he would describe that as a pivotal moment.
Okay. Yeah, Bob Dylan is very well known and one of the pioneers, I think, of the genre in many ways of this style of music. And so he calls it a pivotal moment. Can you explain that one, Catherine?
Sure. A pivotal moment is an event or something that is important and it changes the direction of something that is happening. So I think when he describes the Grammys as their pivotal moment, I think that Mumford & Sons had Say No More and they were pretty popular. But after that performance, after that show, they shot to the top, basically. That was the moment that everyone saw them and was like, wow, this band is great.
Right. So he's not wrong. Nathaniel, what's the evidence of that?
Well, Say No More enjoyed its biggest ever sales week in the days following that telecast, the Grammys on TV that year. So there's evidence in sales, at least, that is true.
Mm-hmm. And so Say No More was, again, their first album. We actually have the title track from that one that we can listen to for a moment now.
Serve God, love me, amen. This is not the end. Live unbruised, we are friends. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
I like how, Nathaniel, earlier you were talking about the music being sort of contemplative, and I feel like that often comes through in their music. And it came through when they were on TV, didn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I believe they played The Cave, that big song of theirs, for the Grammys, and I'm sure a lot of people were able to see it then that hadn't seen them before, kind of like Lovett mentions in the next paragraph.
Okay, what does he say?
Well, he says he believes it introduced the group to people who watch award shows the way that they grew up watching music on TV, I think talking about MTV.
Right, music videos.
Right.
Often that's how we would learn about a band, right? You'd see something come up on the lineup for the top 40 of the week, and you'd think, oh, who's that? Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think, it's sort of exposure to the music. So he thinks it makes sense. Of course, that would widen their audience, get more people listening to them, but
it makes sense that it would widen their audience, but we weren't thinking about that at the time. I think they were probably just so happy to be there singing with Bob Dylan. And I think you can also see just how happy they are if you watch that video online, too.
Okay. Now, this goes back to that idea of them having a strategy but not really calling it a strategy, not really viewing it that way. However, the next paragraph does make it sound like they have some strategy. There's a word that we're using in this case, maneuvering.
That's right. Maneuver means to cause someone to act in a particular way. So whenever they talk about maneuvering, they're talking about maybe the things they do to, to gain popularity, how they do appeal to people, even though they're maybe not the most popular sound out there.
Right. But it's interesting to me that in this paragraph it says, even though there is some maneuvering, they are trying to get themselves in a good space to get popular and so on. It does seem secondary. It seems to come in, in second place compared to what?
Well, their first goal seems to be to give their fans this sense of belonging when they listen to their music. And that's what we see there when it says, sense of belonging the band's songs engender among its fans.
Sort of create among the fans or help bring to life, right?
Right, and I think that's one of the reasons that Mumford & Sons is so appealing, because if you can tell that the band is having fun, you want to listen to them. It's fun to be there. It's fun to listen to.
Yeah, and I've sometimes heard people talk about a certain song or a certain moment feeling almost like you're coming home to something. It feels familiar and it feels like really comfortable, and I think that's true with this style of music.
Right, I think, like I said before, just the way they perform, not only the songs themselves, but the way they perform really brings people together as well.
Okay, as we continue in this paragraph, how do they talk about this?
Well, Mumford & Sons says that they offer a chance to stand up for hand-played music in the age of machine-made pop. They are all about the instruments and creating their own music, playing their own instruments, and being able to be versatile with what they play.
Right. It's this idea that something handmade or done with your actual fingers just seems more personal and more real almost than something made on a computer.
Right. And then it also says that it embodies the feel-good realism of people singing and playing instruments on stage. So if something is embodied, you can see it in front of you. And our definition says represent a quality or an idea exactly. So it's kind of a physical representation of something.
Okay. But finally, it says here, Catherine, that the group isn't didactic about its position. That's an interesting word to use here.
That is. Well, first of all, didactic is something that is intended to teach, especially in a way that is too determined or eager. And what I think they mean here is that a lot of times some artists are really intent on labeling themselves and calling themselves a rock band or a pop star or an indie group. They want to have a label, but Mumford & Sons is sort of, they just say, we play music, and that's about it.
We're
just a band.
Yeah, and that's basically how we end off.
Right. They're not bluegrass or some other traditional form, just a rock band, really, is what Marcus Mumford says. And I think you could also be didactic in trying to say we don't fit in any mold. But I think that they are, like Catherine says, just saying, hey, we just want to play our music. This is what we sound like. Take it or leave it.
Okay. Very nice. Again, all about the music, not so much about the personal side or some special message, but just let's enjoy this. Let's go on and look at the top of page 41 to our sidebar. It says literary influences. Can you read that for us, Catherine?
Sure. Mumford & Sons' music appears to be strongly influenced by literary relics. Sigh No More, the title track of 2009's debut album Sigh No More, quotes a few lines from Shakespeare's Much Ado About Nothing.
Good. So that's the one that we heard a little earlier. I think it's very beautiful. But then we see that other songs also use this technique, right, Nathaniel?
Right. Other songs such as Roll Away Your Stone said to have lines that are taken directly from the Bible. And others, some even think the band has alluded to some John Steinbeck novels in the songs Timshel and Dust Bowl Dance.
Okay, so for one more example of that, let's hear Roll Away Your Stone.
Roll away your stone, I'll roll away mine. Together we can see what we will find. Don't leave me alone at this time. For I'm afraid of what I will discover inside. Cause you told me that I would find a home within the fragile substance of my soul.
Well, I hope that you've enjoyed these last couple of days as much as we have. It's a really fantastic band, and I hope that you'll find a chance to check them out for yourself as well. Maybe go online and search for some of their videos. And while you're on the internet, you can find us at studioclassroom.com. Leave us some of your comments and your ideas about this article. And of course, check out all that we have to offer. We have discussion questions and the English Corner. And of course, we have an exciting feature for this article and some other discussions on Topic Talks. So until next time, this is Naomi.
Nathaniel.
And Catherine.
Saying goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.